do you believe would be the repercussions for Democrats if they end up losing in the recall election?
I think, honestly, there aren't going to be any repercussions. We ain't voting no more. Prima donnas, you want to call the National Guard? Let's get it popping. What happens in Wisconsin? Don't stay in Wisconsin.
Mr. President, you're wrong. This is a national issue. Yes, good old Dingbat Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Look at that. Back in 2012, when you had the recall election going on in Wisconsin, and they put up just a horrible choice who lost in the 2010 election. Having Wasserman Schultz say that, you know, what was going on in Wisconsin was not a national issue was the moment that I beat my head silly, going, "Of course it is. It's the beginning of the end of civilization." And yet, you know, all of the bad ideas that came out of Act 10 and Walker's assaults on public sector workers and on sanity, then, you know, all across the country, like a cancer that we knew it was going to be. And here we are on a night where, again, we lost an election because Democrats didn't stand up and fight back. And, well, we're weak and feckless. And now we're going to end up with what appears to be just one of the crazier of justices. Just nuts. Anyway, here to share some thoughts, maybe a little of my rage for a change. We've asked our good friend Sarah Kendzior to come talk with us, author of the New York Times bestselling book, A View from Flyover Country, and also the co-host of Gaslit Nation, great podcast you must subscribe to. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So there's the quote right there of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Nah, it's not a nationalist. It's not a big deal what happened in Wisconsin. If we lose, yeah, so what?
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of complacency that I think helped doom the 2016 election. And, you know, it wasn't universal throughout the Democratic Party, just like it is now. There are people that are cognizant that don't take these things for granted. But, yeah, I think the assumption that democracy is something that just exists and that you don't have to be continually vigilant over and that you don't have to examine and fight for is a proposition that, you know, people just didn't grasp until it was too late, and they've lost it, and we've been steadily losing more and more of these rights, you know, over the last decade, especially obviously since Trump came to power.
Let's jump into the Kavanaugh thing before we get into the other stuff to rage about. I'm curious your thoughts on this choice.
Oh, it's awful. You know, I mean, the reason he was selected, it seems, is because he believes that a sitting president cannot be indicted. And he's, you know, delivered a number of judgments that the president is immune from consequences for crimes. The president's so busy, he can't be bothered with prosecution. You know, obviously Trump did not dig through a bunch of legal briefs to find this guy, but I think it's clear that people from his advisory team did. And this, you know, I don't want to say it dooms the Mueller investigation, but it certainly hampers it. I was skeptical that the results of Mueller's probe would actually go anywhere before this, because the GOP is unwilling to impeach and because the Supreme Court was already leading in a pro-Trump direction. But now we basically have a situation where a suspected criminal, Trump, is able to select his own judges. You know, that's an autocracy. He's removing one of the essential checks, the judiciary, from the control of citizens and is just putting people in his pocket to carry out his bidding. And this is a lifetime appointment, you know, as are many of the other judges he's selected. This dooms our country for decades to come unless people rise up and fight against this. I don't think that this appointment should be allowed. I don't think that any appointment by Trump should be allowed. And I don't think that a suspected criminal should be able to pick his judge, pick the time of his trial, and pick his jury, which is exactly what's happening.
No, but, you know, my thought on this is, you know, maybe this guy could be that moment that Democrats find a spine, at least the leadership, and push back just on that point. Because I don't think we as Americans like to believe that anyone is above the law and that anyone is above accountability. So to me, this might be that talking point, that messaging point that the three Democrats, Heitkamp, Manchin, and Donnelly are able to stay on the right side of this and maybe even grab a Republican to just, you know, to gum this up a little bit to get us through to the other side of the election.
I hope so. I mean, they should have done this ages ago. They should have protested all of his appointments. They shouldn't have confirmed anybody that he put up there because he was already under suspicion, you know, for what has been proven to be very serious allegations of, you know, illicit engagements with Russia, of essentially treason, on top of all the corruption that he engaged in before, and on top of all the corruption that he's engaged in office, things like emoluments violations that were impossible when he was a private citizen. And they've just been letting it go. And I think that, you know, now people get it. They get that with every day, with every new appointment, their own power diminishes, and we're eventually going to reach a point where we don't have the opportunity to protest this, to vote against this. I'm hoping that people regret their, you know, blind faith that they've had over the last couple years, which doom, you know, hundreds of millions of people. I don't know what they'll do at this point. I don't have faith at all in the GOP to do the right thing. I think, you know, the Democrats should push back on principle that this is a president who continually violates the Constitution and is in no position to pick the people who are supposed to uphold it. You know, he violates it all the time. The issue with, you know, migrant children, you know, and with migrants in general, it is such a grotesque violation of not only constitutional law, but of international human rights law. Like, this is not a person who should be selecting judges in any way. And they should be very, very clear on that. They've got to stop pretending that they can play by the book when the book is burning.
No, and look, I've said for years, I mean, Republicans, they are all in favor of scorched earth. I mean, you look during the Obama years, they were willing to torch the country to get their way. And Democrats just kind of, you know, continually acquiesced and continued to give in and cave into them.
Yeah, it's pathetic. You know, to be clear, I'm still voting for the Democrats because it's absolutely necessary. It's necessary to do that, to root out the Republicans, which are a greater evil, which are, you know, an existential threat at this point. But on the, you know, at the same time, I think we're obligated to criticize the Democrats and to push them in, you know, the right direction. And that's a more assertive direction. That's one that actually acknowledges our political reality, which, yep, is, as you just said, is scorched earth tactics by the Republicans. And you can't just sit there and pretend that it's all going to work out. You know, you've got to be, I mean, I'm not sure I want to quote Avenatti right now because I'm not super thrilled about his presidential aspirations, but he's absolutely need to be a street fighter, be tough. You need to, you know, not break the law, but try to think like the enemy and find effective ways to combat that and be blunt and direct in your rhetoric. You know, I think Maxine Waters is someone who does that very well. And I wish that more people had her honesty and her willingness, you know, to get out there and fight, because that's what's necessary now.
No, I'm right there with you. I've said for years, you know, the you know, Democrats are not somebody I want next to me in a street fight. If I need someone to hold my coat, I want a Democrat there to hold my coat. But they're certainly not someone who's going to be beside me during a street fight, which is why, you know, as you've pointed out, and correctly so, that we need to be voting for Democrats and good ones. Maybe we go and we find a bunch, because I've been interviewing candidates from around the country who I'm thrilled about that are going to in there and
there's
roll up their sleeves and fight back.
Yeah, there's a lot of new people. There's a lot of candidates who I don't think would have entered, you know, government service at a different time, but who feel called to action. You know, and I think that's great. I hope that they actually get the chance to run and have people vote for them, because I still feel that voter suppression and, you know, voter interference and also the scorched earth tactics of the GOP are not fully understood. You know, I think I said on your show before that even if the Democrats do win, you know, and this is not hacked, you know, this is something that's shown, I could easily see the Republicans just refusing to concede, you know, much in the way, you know, that they completely stalled Merrick Garland, even though, you know, that was a violation of protocol. I could just see that. I hope everybody is prepared and is not going to, you know, bow down to them or submit in any way, because they're aiming for one party rule. And people need to understand that. And I've actually been glad to see that, you know, former Republicans have since left the party, they do understand that. They understand that, you know, the Republicans have morphed into something different than what they were before. You know, I personally didn't like what they were before either. But what they are now is essentially an apocalyptic autocratic cult.
No, I'm right there with you. And, you know, what's interesting is you had a number of senators and people going to Russia for 4th of July. One of them, Kansas Senator Jerry Moran, who evidently, according to him, it really shouldn't matter because he didn't really have a good time while he was there.
Yeah, I mean, they were there. That was not exactly a political meeting. You know, that was an energy and economic meeting. That was a meeting about dropping sanctions, which has been the goal of the Kremlin and the goal of Trump and his little pool of lackeys, all of whom have a financial stake in having those sanctions go away and enhancing this mutually beneficial kleptocracy. And this is just an example of these senators, showing that they are in on it, they approve of it, they do not have loyalty to the United States. They were meeting with people, with Russians, who are under sanctions. So, you know, this was an illegal meeting, and they did it purposely on the 4th of July, I think, in a way to kind of flaunt this. I think it's also notable that Trump's first meeting ever with the Russians, you know, then the Soviets, back in 1987, was also on the 4th of July. You know, they flew him out there and put him in the Lenin suite. And this kind of symbolism, I think, is very pointed. And I don't know how much control various Republicans have over what they're doing, because, you know, as I said, the RNC was hacked, and we also know that Trump and his goon squad routinely employ threats and blackmail, and there's also just opportunism keeping Republicans in line. But nonetheless, you know, I thought it was disgraceful, and it's even more disgraceful now that, one of the countries that's our allies in the UK, we have somebody who died from poisoning by, you know, Russians aimed at the former operative who had lived there. And it's like, you know, we're just in a position where they're just so blatant about their abandonment of our old principles, of our old allies, of everything that, you know, I think people kind of took for granted as part of the American order.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's amazing to me. And I'd read that story as well. And, you know, this president just seems to be, you know, completely in their, I don't want to say pocket, but just, you know, kind of just completely under their spell. In fact, there was another story that just came out that evidently he was telling Putin that his stupid staff didn't want them to talk. And I'm going, who does that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he has no respect for anybody who works in the White House, which, granted, perhaps this is a quality I share with Trump, because I have no respect for basically anyone in that White House either. You know, they are dupes, they are lackeys, but nonetheless, it's a basic aspect of a presidency to not berate your own staff to a dictator that's hacked and attacked your country. But, you know, Trump has made very clear where his loyalties lie. He's made it clear all along. He made it clear in the campaign, and he certainly made it clear in the policies that he's pursued and in the way he's behaved towards Putin with just unrelenting deference from the minute that he got into power. And, you know, it's annoying the hell out of me, that people are finally sort of saying, oh, yeah, you know, I guess it really was exactly what it seemed. It's like, yes, you know, it doesn't take a genius to understand Trump. You can, you know, listen to kind of the worst policies he proposes or the most blatant and audacious, violations of protocol and of loyalty. That's who he is. He's actually telling the truth there, because he can't resist bragging. He loves to get caught. He doesn't like to get punished. And so I think on some level, Trump wants us to know who he is. He wants us to know he's not loyal to this country. He's not loyal to his staff. He's not loyal to the American public. And he doesn't care. He's just going to lord it over us and, you know, get off on that feeling.
Yeah, he's loyal to himself. That's one thing. So, you know, is all of this stuff at some point, do we as a nation ever come back together after this? Because, you know, I have friends who, you know, say, you know, how did we get here? How did all this happen? And I'm going, well, pay attention. It's been going on for a while. Is there ever a moment where this we come back together? If Mueller comes out with his report, do we have an epiphany? What do you see going forward?
Wait, sorry, I think you cut out for a sec. Can you repeat the last part of the question?
What do you see, happening going forward? Do you ever see us coming back together as a country?
I mean, it's hard to tell because I actually think that as a country, the majority of the country opposes this president. A lot of these polls lay things out in what I think is a really fatuous manner, where they're like, half of the Republicans are still with Trump. It's like, okay, the Republicans are like 27% of the country. So you're talking about like maybe 14% of the population, like being deeply loyal to Trump and, the vast majority disapproving of him, on various levels. And so, do I think America, as an idea, just sort of an entity of some kind can be put back together? Yes, but I think we may be bonding because we're under the control, of an autocrat who will strip away resources, opportunities, civil rights, freedoms, and people won't be able, to live the way they want, which obviously is part of an ongoing process of that happening. We've seen our institutions eroding, especially over the last 40 years, like basically since Reaganomics, but it will be at a level that just, far surpasses anything we've seen before. And in authoritarian states, I've been to many, I've studied many, you don't necessarily find a lot of outward dissidents because people are terrified, but you do have a sense of people, having a kind of loyalty to country that's not the same as the loyalty to the leader. They're waiting for the leader and the corruption to go away. They don't know how to get rid of it. And so maybe we'll end up united in fear. I don't think that that's a good outcome. I think that's an outcome that we should work now to try to prevent. But in order to do that, we need to be extremely forthright about the problem. We need to use stronger language. He is a liar. He is a criminal. He is someone that absolutely should be impeached and should not be in that position of power. That to me is very basic. And I hope that it's as clear to other people. I hope people are not afraid to say those things out loud.
And even, as far back as 2017, you pointed out in March of 2017 that, Trump without oversight will be in a position akin to a suspected criminal able to select his own judge and delay his own trial. And here we are.
Yeah. I mean, it's all coming to pass. Like there's very few things that I predicted that did not come to pass. And this is not because I'm some sort of super genius prognosticator. Is because Trump follows a fairly easy to predict authoritarian pattern. He's following the playbook of other kleptocrats, especially kleptocrats from the former Soviet Union, which is my area of expertise, so maybe that helps. But you can see where this is going to go. The only thing that's hard to predict is public reaction and pushback. And so I hope there's more. I actually think citizens are doing a good job. I think it's understated, how much that they've protested, they've organized. You see mass protests being held. They don't make the covers of newspapers. I think from interviewing all of these candidates that there's a lot of grassroots organization. There's a lot of new ideas floating around about the direction that our country should go. And I think people are embracing those ideas. They actually want to drain the swamp. They actually want to get rid of this corrupt system. And that's good. The question is, it's a race against time. Will people have the opportunity to do that before this completely consolidates? And every day that passes, I worry, that in some sense we have, I don't want to say we've lost because I think people should always fight anyway, fight as hard as you can anyway. But obviously, the longer he's in, the more dangerous the situation is for everyone. Yeah.
And the more people he puts on the court, especially on the Supreme Court, the longer that goes. Last question I've got for you. Alan Dershowitz was running around for a bit, whining about all of his friends on Martha's Vineyard who have been shunning him. Shouldn't he be shunned completely by the rest of us?
He should be shunned. I mean, he was accused of raping a child. I mean, like, everyone sort of glosses over this fact that, Alan Dershowitz represented Jeffrey Epstein. This is like among, the many horrible people Dershowitz represented, but he's probably the worst, who is a pedophile and a trafficker of underage girls. And Dershowitz was not only his lawyer, you know, which is gross but legal, but was accused himself of raping a child. And it's like, that to me is so enormous. And, you know, it was settled in court. But nonetheless, if I were the New York Times and I was interviewing Alan Dershowitz every other day, as they're apparently required to do, that's what I'd ask about. Because one of the people who is connected to that Epstein affair is, of course, Donald Trump. And so you see this nexus of, you know, just grotesque, corrupt people linked to this, you know, pedophile sex trafficking ring. I mean, that's a major story. But instead, it's just about Dershowitz and his feelings, and he feels bad, and he can't go to a party. And it's such an indictment of how disgusting New York society is, that that's their world. They don't care what happens to everyday people. They don't care what happens to kids. They don't care what happens to kids who are migrants, and they don't care what happens to little kids who are raped. They care about the feelings of people in their little group, which is rich people like Dershowitz or Trump, and it's just disgusting, and the New York Times is, you know, a disgusting paper for doing that.
Yeah, but it brings me to the idea of, you know, that first meeting back in 1987, because as you pointed out, Trump and Epstein were buddies, and there's, you know, you're associated by the, you know, the people you hang around. So you got to wonder if that's got to be something that's hanging over the head, because, you know, in my view, it's got to be something really ugly for Trump to be in their pocket, if that in fact is what's going on.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think on one hand, you know, Trump is in it with the Kremlin, with the mob, voluntarily. You know, he's in it to make money. He's in there to protect himself. It's a way of life he's been participating in for 40 years. I don't think he knows another way. But on the other hand, you know, of course, any enemy of his, of course, the Kremlin, would collect insurance, you know, would collect some sort of blackmail in case he steps out of line. And they're not only doing it on Trump, but on, you know, all of the other people he associates with, and likely a lot of members of the GOP. And yeah, I've always thought that whatever sexual blackmail exists about Trump, it's not something about prostitutes or even the pee tape. I don't think that's enough to actually bother Trump, because the Trump tactic is to have a kind of humiliating or ridiculous story, mask a story of extremely serious criminal corruption. He does this all the time. He doesn't mind if people think he's a moron or they think he's an asshole. He minds if they think he's a criminal, and therefore he'll have to face consequences. And so I've always thought that whatever they gathered on him probably had to do, you know, with minors or with rape or with something that is just flat out illegal and not just, you know, or immoral.
And something that, you know, his knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing base might go up. That's wrong. Or, you know,
they might defend it. You know, you see how they're okay with Roy Moore. You know, they're okay with Jim Jordan. They're okay with a lot of these guys. But, you know, the law is the law. And if there's some sort of video of Trump, you know, raping someone or raping, God forbid, a child, like, I mean, I hope that there is not such a video, let me be clear, because of the horror of the incident itself. But if there is, I mean, it would be so blatantly illegal that something would have to be done, I would assume. I mean, my God, this is such a dark conversation. It's like hard to talk about it. So in one way, I hope it's not true. You know, generally, I hope it's not true. But I also hope that, you know, there are a array of other crimes that he's committed that he can be indicted on. And I really wish that people would get going on that.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'm with you on the really dark, and I hope it's not true, but the sad reality is this is what we're talking about, like, about a guy who is the president of the United States.
And it's a reasonable assumption. That's the unfortunate part, because when you're friends with numerous pedophile sex traffickers, people are going to wonder why. Yep. I mean, and that's the truth about Trump.
There you go. Sarah, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
As always, great talking with you, and again, left on a really, really dark, dark note there. And I almost speechless. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.